Hello everyone, and welcome to Charlotte View. I'm your presenter Daniel, and I'm here with your host, Claudia Pareko. The School of Esoteric Healing in North Carolina and California proudly presents the Character Structure Series, hosted by Jennifer Boos, who holds certifications in spiritual energy healing, past life regression, life between lives spiritual regression therapy, hypnotherapy, geobiology, sound healing, and is an Awakening Your Light Body instructor. Much of our human suffering is not necessary. It is created by old patterns of feeling and acting that helped us survive the traumas of childhood, but then got stuck in our bodies. These patterns have shaped us so deeply that now we think that's who we are. But these patterns are not your true self. In fact, they cover up your true self and prevent it from shining out into the world. Learning about your character structure creates a map that shows you the path out of your suffering and back to your true self. Once you know where you're going, your journey will be easier. Without a map, you may have been walking in circles for years. With a map, you can find your way home. Learn in depth about each character structure, how to identify, understand, and work with these patterns in yourself, your relationships, and your clients. As a director of the School of Esoteric Healing, Jennifer is an active educator leading certification programs and seminars on energy medicine and whole body, mind, spirit wellness using principles of meditation, metaphysics, and light body techniques. To learn more about the curriculum and classes, please visit www.school-of-esoteric-healing.com. There are 5 character structures, and all episodes are conveniently available free on our website, www.charlotteview.net, under Jennifer Boos at the Monthly Shows tab. Please stay for the Q&A section after the lecture. You can register to the chat room or call 805-830-8344 and press 1 to talk with the host. Now, enjoy the episode of the day.
Well, hello everybody, and welcome to Charlotte View. We have had a little difficulty connecting to the show, but here we are. I don't know if the introduction was play or not, but we will change all of that when the show is done. So today we're going to talk about the Character Structure Series, and this is our 5th episode. We have had Jennifer Boos, who is the director of the School of Esoteric Healing in Winston-Salem, come to our show for 5 times now and talk about the character structures, which are spoken in the energy field and the personality traits according to energy field in the chakras and the Barbara Brennan School of Learning. So it's not your psychological terms, even though they have a lot of similarities. On this occasion, we're going to talk about the rigid character structure. And if you follow Charlotte View or the School of Esoteric Healing, you should have noticed that some of the characteristics of the rigid character structure has to be with how flexible you are in life, how much you allow things in your life to go in, and how much you change and allow change and like change or even accept people into your life, how close you feel them, how comfortable you are with people that are close to you or with new people that come into your life. And this is just some of the characteristics that we have noticed and we have been talking about. But let's bring Jennifer Booth to the show so she can tell us a little bit more about this. Hey, Jennifer.
Hi, Claudia. How are you?
I'm doing fine, I hope.
Yeah, right. Well, you know, these technical glitches happen, and I appreciate you handling that. Yeah, so this is our last character structure of the series. It's the fifth one, and it's a very interesting character structure. I mean, of course, all of them are interesting, but this one is it's a little bit different than the rest because this is the one that develops last. It develops when we're between, well, depending on you know, who you are, who you're reading, it can happen between 3 and 5 years old or between about 7 and 12. With that in mind, I just want to begin by saying our inner journey takes time, and, you know, studying our character type helps us find a better way of surviving our automatic defenses and learn to get out of pattern and into presence. Our survival patterns, our character type, our character structure are happening within us. It's our life energy and awareness moving through our bodies, and particularly in times of stress. Now, that flow of energy can shape us physically as well as emotionally, but the influences how a person sees the world, their experience, how they think and feel. And this energy flow is so fundamental that it can even shape the body as it grows. And this is true through all the character structures. So our survival patterns, our character structures, are based on how energy flows through the body. And a pattern is something that a person does to protect him or herself when they're in an overwhelming or difficult situation. It's not something that they are. It's not something that we are. Now, when we are in pattern, when we are stepping into that defense, our perceptions are filtered and they're distorted. And the survival pattern is that automatic body-based reaction that we go into to try to buffer ourselves from feeling overwhelmed. But it's a reaction that's conditioned by our past traumas. It's not a response to the present situation. Now, sometime in the past, it was the best strategy we could find to deal with difficult ongoing situations, and over time, it was so deeply conditioned into our bodies that now it automatically kicks in whenever we're distressed, and it makes us act as if the past distress is still happening to us even when it's not. So the key to discovering your pattern is to look at how you are when you're overwhelmed or upset. And your patterns aren't a way to justify your behavior, but they will help you understand what's behind your behavior and how you can change it. So it's tremendously helpful to understand other people's survival patterns or the character structure and be in relationship and work with be in relationship with other people with more compassion. And we can learn how to get out of pattern and return to being, you know, present with a capital P. So, you know, it's important that you know about character structure, but never ever use it against anyone else. As you learn more about survival patterns, you might be tempted to label or judge people, and you know, please don't do that. It's important to remember that everyone has a survival pattern that affects our own experiences and perceptions, and when we learn to recognize when we're in our survival pattern, we can really get the skills that we need to shift ourselves out of that pattern and back into being present. So the more time we spend being present, the easier it is for us to step out of our survival pattern or our character structure. Now, most of us here are involved deeply in spiritual practice to help us connect with the presence of our true self. But until we heal those core traumas that give rise to our survival patterns, we still go into our patterns when we feel we are overwhelmed. And we can break that pattern with a healing experience that dissolves the core trauma that created the survival pattern. So today, as we look at the fifth and final character structure, we will look at the structure that likes rules. And this is the rigid character pattern who likes keeping things in order and under control and doing things the right way and making sure other people do too. So.
And Jennifer, we're talking about the rigid pattern, and this is the fifth one, and many people, when they see 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, they might make the assumption that because it's number 5, it might be the best one or the worst one to have. But that's not the case, even though this is created later on in life, correct?
That's right. None of the character structures are better or worse than another. It's simply the way that we try to self-protect as we're, you know, as we're growing up. And we try a lot of different methods of self-protection, you know, to, you know, like the schizoid wants to leave their body and the oral wants to merge with the other person. Or with another person. And so there are, you know, all of these character structures are just survival patterns, because when we, you know, when we're young or, you know, really, you know, all the way down back to infancy, when we feel like our needs aren't being met, we go into fear and we feel like we have to, you know, we're trying to find a way to, you know, preserve our lives, which may look very threatening to a child when and that is, you know, and all these are derived from the child's perception of their life. So, you know, we take on these behaviors in order to shield ourselves from what we're kind of expecting to happen, you know, whatever we fear is coming next. We, you know, everyone wants to survive. So we do what we can at all of these life stages in order to self-protect. So that's actually what's going on with the character structures. They're not good or bad.
Yeah, right. And so some of the characteristics that we can talk about the character structure, I'm going to name them, but I'm going to call you on the switchboard that I got back while I name the characteristics, and then we can have you back. Is that okay?
Yeah, that's fine.
Okay, so hang up there, and I'll dial you right now.
Okay.
Okay, so some of the characteristics.
The number you dialed will not accept your call.
That we find on the rigid character structure would be an unwillingness to fall in love, or to engage in
the number you dialed will not accept your call.
Or to engage in a long-lasting monogamous relationship. Another characteristic is a series of broken relationships, marriages, or extramarital affairs in which either some sexual or emotional gratification experience, but never the two together with the same person. Driveness or competitiveness, restlessness, hyperactivity, relentless need to look good and achieve. And these are some of the characteristics that are found in the rigid character structure. But again, let's have Jennifer explain us a little bit, because when you say, Jennifer, that you have a willingness to fall too deeply in love, and you tell that to someone that is really looking for someone else, and how come you want something, but then you reject that something?
Yeah, that's a good question. Well, the thing about the person using that rigid survival pattern is that they have no core sense of self because it's always been denied. And they are always looking outside of themselves for the reasons or the rules because they're very rule-oriented. And they are very, they see things in black and white so that, you know, things are either right or wrong. And when they're, and since they can't self-reference for making decisions, they're always looking for you know, for the rules outside of themselves to tell them how to act or behave. They don't respond. They simply run on rules. So they are, you know, so they do this looking outward, and it's they really have a fear of the gray areas of, you know, they just, because they don't want to be wrong, and they don't want to they don't want to be criticized or exposed either. So. So that's what's going on, you know, a little bit with the rigid character structure. They are wanting to be perfect. They want to be a perfect performer, and that shows up in a lot of different ways. It could, you know, it can show up as sexual performance, or you know, or performance in the work environment, performance as a parent. You know, there are all ways that performance shows up with this character, and they actually, you know, they have beautiful bodies and wonderful minds, and they have wonderful self-control. So they are, you know, their body image is very important to them. So. You know, so they really are attempting perfection also through the intellect. They're very intelligent and disciplined in their study and work, and they're very, you know, reliable and hardworking. So so that's a little bit of the you know, the matrix of that perfectionism that this rigid character structure presents. But you know, there are actually two paths that commonly lead to a child developing the rigid survival patterns. The less common situation occurs when the parents in the home situation is chaotic and unstructured, but this particular child needs the safety of an ordered and structured environment. And in that case, the child adopts the rigid pattern as a way to bring more order and structure into her life. So she herself creates the order and the structure that she needs as a reaction to its absence. But the more common situation occurs when, one or a lot of the time both parents are in the rigid pattern and they overemphasize rules and order in the home. So, they're believing that this is the best way to be, and they make that a requirement of their child. So between about 3 and 5 years old, the child becomes increasingly aware and able to exercise her will and take action in the world. And this is, the child's learning how to choose for herself. And, the parents would provide guidance and set limits and teach manners. And the process of also finding the answers within herself is typically happening between 3 and 5 years old, all the way up to 12. That finding answers within the self, that would look like simply reflecting back to the child what she seems to be feeling in certain circumstances, by saying things like, you look sad, or you sound angry. And the parents give names for the feelings, so the child learns to reference her own body sensations and feelings as information to use in making decisions. So the child she's using her sensations and feelings as an inner guide for her decisions, in addition to the external guidance and that her parents give her. So this is how how a child learns to make decisions that are right for her, and learn that she can trust herself. So this stage is about developing self-trust and self-confidence, as well as self-referencing. That is, that means to reference the core of our body and our own feeling, and then we can find the answers to like basic questions like, how do I feel? What do I want? Do I like or dislike this? Do I prefer this one or that one? So learning to feel your own core and referencing it when you're making decisions is the foundation for knowing and trusting yourself. This is how we gained self-confidence and, ultimately the utility to reference our own core as, the source of our authenticity, and it's, really a key to developing an authentic self. So for the child caught in a rigid survival pattern, so, those parents, they're blind to certain parts of the child, so the child becomes blind to those parts as well. And if her parents aren't able to reflect back the child's own heart and essence, it might be very hard for her to feel and reference parts of herself. And if her parents are also unaware of their own essence and don't reference themselves when making their own decision, the child has no model. So this is the core wound of the rigid pattern. Their life, their inner life, wasn't reflected back to them. And so they didn't learn to reference it as a source of inner guidance.
Have you found, Jennifer, that a lot of these people, these rigid people, they tend not to want to recognize feelings and probably put it out in some way like, I don't get mad. Mad is not part of what I do, because that's their problem, and I really don't mind if they react that way or not. I just won't allow madness, anger into my life because all I want is peace, things like that.
Right, and you know, the anger is a feeling, and the rigid just isn't in touch with any of their feelings, but they really don't even realize that they have feelings. One interesting thing about this survival pattern is that they are very good with words. And they use words instead of feelings. They can describe how something appears or how something looks. They're very adept at that. But when it comes to talking about feelings, they don't have a connection to it. And things can get really really stuffed down for the rigid because they're storing up all these emotions that they can't feel for years, and eventually, this is true for everybody, eventually those feelings are going to come out. And one of the ways that the anger or any kind of emotional release for the rigid might show up as some sort of what they would consider unacceptable behaviors, like getting drunk and dancing on tables, that sort of thing. So it does come out, and they're very, very embarrassed, after they, the next morning after the explosion, they are very embarrassed and just mortified that they behaved in such a manner, and so they'll be they'll be very stoic about it, but they can't believe that they behaved that way, but they don't really feel any embarrassment. They look at it as something that happened, and I'm sure that they can't even explain it themselves because they just don't have access to what triggered it or what caused it.
And then Jennifer, when a person that is using this type of defense, the rigid defense, they come to your practice or to an interview or when you first met them, would you be able to identify certain things that they do or things that they would say that you would think, oh, this person is probably rigid?
Yes. The rigid person does not like emotional display, like they expressing affection. They don't do a lot of that. They don't like to be touched, so they aren't the warm fuzzy people, like the oral. They don't want to hug people. So because they've got extremely strong boundaries, and they don't want that boundary invaded. So that's typically how they show up. But it's also the things that they say. Also, it's like they're very very informed and very sure about how things should be and how things should run and how people should behave. There's lots of shoulds when in their talk. But like I said, they're also very highly intelligent, and they can talk about anything very intellectually except feelings. So they have this kind of presence. They're very, very organized people. You know, these are the people that, like the gifts of the rigid are this, the ability to be highly organized. And, if you want someone to plan a party or a big event, you want that planner to be rigid because he'll be sure everything gets done on time and executed perfectly. So there's no reason to be afraid that things won't come off, splendidly when you have the rigid running your event. Rigids also often turn out to be librarians, because a library has to be kept very organized, and in order. So these are the people that, always have a meticulously ordered home, always clean, always impeccably furnished. They have, it always looks like, Architectural Digest. So that's how you can kind of tell if you're in relationship with the rigid defense.
It sounds very businesslike, very formal, very. They would not be having any histrionics during your interviews. And they would not come without knowing why they're there, probably, right?
Right. The rigid is the second most unlikely client to show up on your healing table, because they are perfect. There's nothing wrong with them. So why would they show up? But they do, because this, we're living in a time where people are having a lot more connection, whether they realize they're having connection with with the spirit realms or not. They may come to you because they want to be more perfect, and they think that a healing session will take them to a higher state of perfection. So that might be a reason that they would show up on your table.
And maybe if they have awakened themselves, they would be also there because they are tired of this fear of perfection that they live with. So maybe
absolutely.
That's some of the other. Yeah.
Yeah, they are, because if you think about how vigilant you have to be in order to maintain perfection, it's got to be exhausting. So they may be physically exhausted trying to hold their life up to this high standard, and they burn out. And that may be a reason that they would come to you.
And I would wonder also, Jennifer, that there are some times in your life where this kind of pattern will show up more in people in general. I'm thinking probably when you're going through a grief period, you become a lot rigid, because pretty much you bring all your energy in because you are in so much pain. But I have heard that many people that are in deep grief become a lot of ritualistic or obsessive in just paying attention on things that doesn't really matter. They try to give some kind of order or control to your life. But I don't know if this is something that would show in all of the character structures, or would it be only true for a rigid to present this?
Yeah. Well, I think that it can show up in every character structure, because when we are in a highly elevated state. state of emotion, like grief, we want to keep busy in order to distract ourselves from the pain that we're experiencing. So I think that can happen to every character structure. The for the rigid, grief could be a spiritual awakening for them when they actually feel the loss, when it really strikes, you know, to the core of their being. And this is something that is often seen in anybody who has open heart surgery. When the when they have surgery and the chest is opened, that's also like tearing open the heart chakra as well. And when those people get out of surgery, they are suddenly, you know, showing up in the world as a much more loving person. So, and that can happen throughout all of the character structures as well. So, there are behaviors that run throughout the entire character structure system, and that's a good example of it.
And Jennifer, when you are talking about the rigid character structure, I know we are visualizing our chakra system. Their energy, we have the front of the chakras and the back of the chakras, and one of them is more emotional and the other one is more action-oriented. So how would their energy on those terms would look like?
Okay, well, the will centers, the chakras, the rear aspects of the chakras are very strong in the rigid, and because they run on will, they aren't running through the emotional centers of the front aspects of the chakras. So, you'll find a lot of blocks and distortions in the front, a lot of very sluggish chakras. You probably find a lot of masculine splits in the chakra, which indicate you are forcing things to happen instead of approaching life from a feeling and a receptive state. So the front chakras are going to tend to be deficient in energy, and the rear chakras will probably be pretty excessive in the way they are taking in and sending out the energy that moves through the system. But another thing about the energy body of the rigid, there is a lot of very strong armoring in the energy field, and that's how they're creating these energetic boundaries that are so difficult to break through and make contact at a deep emotional level with the rigid, because they are when they are going into their pattern of defense, they're continually holding their breath and drawing in. So they tend to breathe more shallowly, and they are in a physical holding pattern, and that's one of the things that creates their physique. Because they show up as very with perfect posture, with an athletic body, they're always very well groomed and well dressed, and so this is how they're showing up in the world. And when you have that kind of armoring in the body, it is going to help you maintain an uprightness, physically, And when you're working on them, you're going to find, you know, there's a lot to break through with them energetically and, you know, help work with them and helping them get down into the core of their being so that they can touch their, you know, their God self and access their aliveness, because they can tend to be very robotic, and the looks on the face can be very stoic looking. You know, there's not a lot of expression. So, you know, so these are other ways that you can recognize the rigid defense.
If they are having all the back of the chakras, all these exaggerated energy because the will is very strong, are you also going to find a lot of problems with their back pain or shoulder pain? What kind of symptoms do you have related to that?
Mm-hmm. Well, they're what I have tend to see in when with the rigid character structure that shows up on my table, there's a lot of lower back pain, and I've seen this also in a couple of clients as well. Besides the lower back pain, there is like a degenerative bone disease present as well, so that the, you know, it's kind of like their structure, their uprightness begins to break down as they get older. And this may very well show up as, I'm taking a wild guess here, because both of these rigid clients that I have are male, but I can imagine that often osteoporosis could be a symptom of a rigid character structure. Not saying that it won't show up in any of the others, because it, you know, certainly can, but that might also be a sign to look for that rigid response in your client. So yes, they can have difficulties, you know, beyond just the back. They can also, you know, because of their excessive rear chakras, they can also have very, you know, a lot of problems with their joints, like their shoulders and their elbows, their knees and their ankles. And these can be very good places for arthritis to take up home and begin to, even constrict those joints more than they already are. So, again, not saying that that's the only character structure that arthritis will show up in, but because of all of this really intense armoring and withdrawing within, it makes the whole body system contract, and the energy gets really, it stops the energy from flowing through the body, and, you know, that shows up in the joints, because those are, you know, that's where we're having most of the movement in our body. So those, you know, your joints and your and all your bones need to be really kept in good functioning order. And when we're constricting our bodies physically because we're holding in emotion, it's really going to take a toll on the physical body.
That's interesting. You know what I'm thinking on one of my clients, and I don't know if that, if you have found that on yours, because of that energy in your back, I would probably be looking at kidney issues as well.
Ah, yeah. That could be. I haven't had that show up on with my clients, but, you know, you want to consider that the kidneys, although, you know, physically they're located in the back, You know, it's like they're actually, well, let me back up just a little bit. All of our character patterns are related to a certain chakra. Mm-hmm. And the chakras that the character structures are related to governs certain body systems. So interestingly, the fifth chakra is what regulates the rigid structure. Some people say it's, and it can be the heart as well, the heart or the fifth chakra. But I don't know. I think the kidneys might be related to a different thing. So if it shows up shows up with the rigid as a kidney problem, you might want to, you know, maybe look at some of the lower chakras, because that's where the kidney system is manifesting through.
So, Jennifer, we're talking about physical things that are characteristic of the rigid. And we have talked about some of the emotions, but what about their minds and their will? What kind of thoughts or what kind of emotions are related to this pattern?
Yeah, well, the rigid pattern is very self-confident. And, you know, it's there from that self-confidence, you know, comes the, it kind of like springs from being right and considering yourself to be right because you're following rules. So the parents' attention, you know, was only on the surface of the child, like on, you know, on their appearance and on their performance. And so they were, you know, they were taught to use, you know, rules as their guidance, you know, as I've said. But, you know, that since, you know, rigid people are often married to another rigid, you know, this is going to help a child also learn the rigid ways. And so they're going to be, you know, paying very little attention to, you know, personal feelings or desires. So there's just not any reference given to or importance given to how the child feels. It's always just about how, you know, what is the right way of everything. And when they perform well, then they get praise. And everything else is, you know, either criticized or corrected or ignored. And actually, the parents aren't modeling how to be spontaneous or silly or playful to the child. They don't do anything just for the fun of it, just for the feelings of it, because, you know, because they're uncomfortable with the affection or any strong emotion. So they, you know, avoid spontaneity and affection, and this is how, you know, the child grows up. So the rigid patterned parents, they're often withdrawing their heart connection from the child when the child makes a mistake or does something that's considered wrong. And typically the parents aren't aware that they're doing this, since, you know, they're not aware that they've dropped the heart connection with their child, because they're not consciously tracking their own hearts, so they don't notice that they've dropped the heart connection. You know, they think that they're teaching the child, which, you know, what is proper, But the child feels that, you know, that loss of connection from the parents. And so the child, you know, because they want, you know, the love of their parents, they learn how to correct themselves in order to keep the heart connection and the love. And consciously, you know, she's... The child's not going to feel any hurt or even know that anything is happening a lot of times. And that's
you know
actually
what,
a different...
It sounds a lot as if you were raised up in the crown, in court, with being a king and queen and all of the learned behaviors that this is appropriate, this is not appropriate. If you are angry, you would never express your anger, but you might get into a competition and win it. Or if you are sad, you will never cry your eyes out in front of anybody, but you might build a statue for that person that you're crying about. So
mm-hmm.
Is this more? Okay.
Yeah, those are really good examples of a rigid structure. You know, also a lot of times the rigid can be confused with the psychopathic character structure, because the psychopathic character structure doesn't feel very much either. So, thinking back to, back to those times when, you know, there was, you know, the two-class structure, there were the rulers and the everyone else.
mm-hmm.
A lot of that, you know, expression, of it was definitely rigid because there was no heart connection with anything, but... there was a lot of expression of the that psychopathic behavior too, which was corporal punishment, decapitations and jousting matches, that sort of thing was acceptable, as acceptable expression of you've done wrong and so you must pay the price, sort of, That was that kind of lifestyle. So it's interesting to look at, the rigid along with the psychopath, because that's a very interesting pairing. And if you even go so far as to think about not, everyone has like at least a secondary pattern that they use in life. And if you think about what a psychopathic character structure and a rigid character structure, overlaid on top of each other might look like, that's a pretty terrifying character.
Yeah, having those two, it would be someone that actually will be expressing all of that anger and doing
mm-hmm.
horrible things.
Right,
and
having no feeling about it, yeah.
Yeah, no remorse. So
right.
All of this, it must have some impact on the person because they cannot experience their authentic self. So what is it that psychologically you would be finding on the character structures? Rigid.
Okay. With rigid, they would be, they have to feel, in order to feel like they are, like, worthy of being alive, they have to live their lives in perfection. And if they can't manifest perfection, they really, it's like they consider themselves failures. They may go so far as to feel like they don't deserve to live because they haven't manifested at a high enough degree. So these are the people that, psychologically they think that, as I mentioned before, performance is everything and how they show up in the world. And everything is very structured. And these are, and it's very hard to break through that, you know, psychological barrier that they maintain. It's a barrier just like the energetic barrier. You know, it's hard to break through and get them to look at life from a different perspective, you know, from the perspective that they can relax and they don't have to have everything perfect, although initially it will probably drive them crazy because they need to see everything lined up. And, you know, their children have to look perfect and perform perfectly in school so that the family can maintain this image of perfection. And you see a lot of this behavior in the South, which is very interesting to me because because people in the South, it's like they have this way of believing that everything should be done in a certain way at a certain time and under specific conditions as well. So typically with we're coming up on the holidays, you know, and this in the typical rigid household, there's not going to be a lot of display of emotion, you know. So a lot of people have very stressful holidays with, you know, with family, and things come up that, you know, things that have to be, you know, sorted out, you know, in the family. And if, you know, with the rigid parents, and the rigid parents tend to produce rigid children because that's how the children feel like they receive love, is through performing well. So you're not going to see a lot of explosive emotional, revelation going on during the rigid house during the holidays. So, you know, also in the house, in the South, people they tend to be very, you know, traditional, and you know, it's like not so much anymore, but, you know, decades ago when the Izod shirts were in style, when they were fashionable, you know, the little shirts with the, what they have on them, a horse or something, like polo shirts.
Mm-hmm.
Those were big in the South. You know, men and women wore them. You know, the women, it was like a uniform, and I thought that that was very, very interesting. Also, you know, there are certain fashion brands that they will tend to, that they're attracted to, like the Ralph Lauren is a good example. I think, you know, he might be pretty rigid himself, and so he's producing the fashions that the rigids want to take on as their uniforms.
Do you think that maybe also this character structure is mostly found on people of that have a higher non-standard status, like high class, the rich? It's more than people that are raised in the land or farmers, and I'm not saying that one, but it's most of the descriptions that you are saying, it makes me think of rich and powerful, and all it's about perception and very preoccupied for what others might think or say.
Yes. I think it's easier to see in the, you know, in the upper classes than it is in the, you know, like with farmers. I think the upper classes are not the only ones. It's just easier to see, I think. So, you know, it's like with the farmers, they think, for example, it's like, you know, they're people, they get up at the, you know, the crack of dawn, they have a routine that they stick to, and they, you know, they always come in for lunch at noon, and they're, you know, and leave at 12:30, to go back out doing what they're doing. They're very, very routine oriented, and so.
But that could be the rigid.
Yeah, yeah. It's that routine that has to be adhered to, you know. And they love that kind of structure because if they're following the rules and going by the structure, they can just be on autopilot. And that's what makes life easy for them.
Okay, so we have been talking about the rigid character structure, so we're finding a lot of masks that they find, like this need of perfection, this need of telling people they are available, but really they're not, because if you're a woman, you are having this need to look almost like a Barbie, or if you're a man, you have to be this hero type. And you talked and said this is something that comes from childhood. Now, if we talk about relationships in the rigid structure, what are we finding?
Well, the relationships are pretty shallow, you know, because you have a rigid friend that you are talking to, and the rigid friend never talks about emotions or feelings or how they felt when something happened or how they felt when somebody did something, you know. They don't know that part of them exists. So they're not going to be talking about, you know, anything that upset them. They will be talking about what was done wrong, you know, how something should have been that wasn't. It's all about, setting up this structure of how things should go. And as long as you follow that, you know, that structure, your life's going to be fine and perfect, and you can go through your entire life and never have a single feeling. And that's fine with them because they don't know anything else. So when you're in relationship with somebody like that, you know, they can be very competitive in order to, you know, be the best, because they do want to be the best, because that's the highest level of perfection is when you're the best. And they are great students, and they're great at anything that requires structure and form, like architecture and music and there's a whole host of things, a long list of jobs or pastimes, you know, hobbies that require to be executed through a structured format, and they're really good at that. You know, I mentioned before, like librarians are really, they tend to be in a rigid pattern, so they can keep everything organized. But, you know, the artistic life is going to be very structured as well. So you're probably not going to have a lot of abstract painters as rigid, because abstract is more free flowing, and you're not going to have expressionistic painters, because the expressionistic painting is about emotion and evoking emotion from the person who's looking at the painting. So they make great policemen, because they have an inner policeman that's policing them constantly anyway. So they can be, you know, great in law enforcement and as lawyers,
in the military.
As well. Yes, in military.
Mm-hmm. What about the higher self aspects? Oh, sorry.
No, that's okay. The higher self aspects, Well, you know, they have, since they've shut so much down, they aren't often open to the higher realms, because, you know, when you are tapped into the higher realms, really tapped in, you're likely to experience bliss, and that's a feeling. So that's not a place that the rigid goes. And besides that, they're very intellectual. They're in their mind. And when you're in your mind, when you live in your mind, you don't go much higher than that. You know, it makes it more difficult to access the divine when you are thinking.
So in that way, if we think of those limiting aspects of the rigid, we could see that some of their life tasks would be to break all of that, the armor they are living with, and all that structure rigidness in their lives. What other things do you can you tell us about why they are here, or what are their challenges in life?
Well, their, of course, you know, their main challenge is to experience emotion and break out of that, you know, that rigid behavior that is, you know, it's really an illusion, and it's an unsustainable illusion, because you know, they're like, you know, like we talked about before, that withholding is really going to be what is, sets up all of these physical illnesses in the body. So it's really something to look at and be aware of. You know, if you're rigid, if you're not, you know, if you're holding that kind of character, you know, of course they're you know, these are very disciplined bull. There's really not a lot of room for any kind of creativity or originality, because everything has to be, you know, systematic and organized and predictable. So, you know, that's what the, you know, the rigid pattern loves. And also, you know, and the material world, they love the material world and all the possessions that you can have, and because that makes you look more successful. So, I'm sorry, would you tell me your question again?
Now, we're talking about the life task. So you're saying that they have to release all of this tension and all of these critique they have about themselves, and all of this control of their feelings. So that's part of the things that they are here to learn and to develop that flexibility in life, correct?
Right. Yeah. So the life task of the rigid is to it's that unmet need of the pattern. You know, it's like they need to be open, and all of this is very difficult for the rigid, because the only way they know how to be is rigid. They aren't open to feelings, and so it's like their task is to come to the understanding that there's more to life than they are experiencing, and part of what brings them into an authentic sense of being is to let go of the barriers and to go deep, deep, deep within, into the core essence of their being. And that actually takes a lot of work on their, you know, it takes a lot of work for them to reach that because there's so much armoring and boundaries that they have to shed in order to access that part of themselves. So there's always this, pushing away that they have to get beyond and stop trying to be in control. So one of the things that happens with the rigid, as far as, you know, loosening up on the one right way of doing things, and moving and to heal rather than to be so guarded. You know, they've got to move toward their feelings rather than toward the forms and the rules. So their task is to learn how to feel and value their own feelings, value their needs, and to trust their own feelings and use their feelings as a source of guidance and really allow that full flow of their life force energy to move through their body. So that's the broad look at it. You know, it's like those unmet developmental needs of the rigid patterned people is to have all their parts seen and valued and loved, and especially those young and needy, vulnerable parts. You know, they need to feel loved and cherished just for who they are without having to do anything. So that's what they're healing. That's what they are here to, that's their life purpose, is to heal that wound.
And lastly, Jennifer, before we finish with the presentation of the rigid, let's talk about how us as healers can help them out with achieving their life task.
Yeah.
So
well,
when they are on the table.
Yeah. So, you know, one thing that you want to do is to, even though they have strong boundaries, you don't have to worry so much about, moving into their energy field. So you don't have to worry about, having the wrong frequency in your field. But, you know, really, when they are talking, well, when you're talking to them, it's important to use your words carefully, because, you know, they're very, very hypercritical of how things are said. So when you're talking to them, before you start your healing session, you want to be very careful about how you speak to them, and you want to speak to them with a certain tone of openness and loving kindness and, you know, unconditional acceptance, and really, you know, when you're standing in their field, you know, a lot of healing takes place through, harmonic conduction. So when we feel our core essence, you know, and allow it to grow and expand within us, then that helps them feel it also, just because, you know, we're sharing space with them. So that's how they can feel the essence of someone else is, it's learning how to touch into that inner feeling just by, movement helps them a lot. You know, dancing is really good for the rigid, so that, they can experience a flexible body, because, you know, since they're rigid, there's not a lot of flexibility in the body. So some of the things, like homework that you could give them, is have them spend time hugging people and letting people touch them physically as well as emotionally, and dancing, like I said. And really, just any kind of exuberance at all is really good for them, because, you know, it's like their heart energy is blocked, and they're in their heads. So they're going to need this movement is like really, really helpful for them. So when they're on your table, you really want to be in that place of love with them and have them focus on their heart chakra while you're working on them, and encourage them to, instead of having a blank mind or going over their to-do list, you want to encourage them to get into feeling their core essence through their heart chakra, and think of a time, perhaps, that that they actually were in a position or in a circumstance when they could have felt love, and to experience what that feels like, you know, to allow themselves to go there, because they stop themselves. It's like they build their own walls around themselves so that they can't experience. So, you know, the rigid is a very serious person, so they need to welcome surprises and laugh and be more open-minded and seeing things in a new way. So opening up is really what the rigid can do. So when you're working on their energy body, you want to soften the outer layers of their field. And we talk about this in class, in school, is, you know, a lot of times the rigid structure will actually push your hands out of their body. You can like feel that resistance and that pushback when you put your hands near them. So one of the things that you can also do is soften the seventh level of their field, and you just do that, you know, through intention. And and one of the things that you know we do in class also is like we just send this kind of softening oil-like substance through our hands into the seventh level of their field, just with the intention of softening it. And you can walk all around the table just, you know, with the intention of softening their field. And you can do that before you start their healing and after. So those are a few ways that you can work with the rigid character structure on your table.
And also, let's talk about when in class you also said that one of the things to do would be to reconnect the fourth and the second chakra, and this
right.
will help them with their ability to connect with others.
Yes, because the second chakra is you know our emotional center. And connecting the fourth and the second chakras is also very helpful for the rigid sexually, because it they tend not to associate love with sex. Most of the time, it's sex is more for feeling alive. It's like they yearn for this, you know, feeling of aliveness. And so a lot of times they get that feeling through having sex, but they're not doing it for love. They are very concerned about being, great sexual performers, but they aren't doing it from a place of love. So you always have to go back and, every time you see them, reconnect their second with their fourth so that they can, not only have, have a meaningful sexual relationship, but also get in touch with their feelings through the heart and the emotional body through the second chakra. So I'm glad you brought that up. Yeah, that's very important and so beneficial for them.
And you know what? I remember in the class that it really piqued my interest. I have heard a lot of times that you go to a healer so they can cut your cords. But in this particular character structure, you mentioned that you need to strengthen the cords, especially those that go to their fourth chakra.
Right. Because what the cords do, they create a connection between people. And in the fourth chakra, that's where your connecting to people who you love, like your family and your husband or your lover. And it's important to make sure that those cords are clean and strongly connected so that you can have a meaningful relationship instead of a superficial relationship with people. And keeping them clean, that's a really the main thing, is making sure they're firmly attached. Because if you aren't feeling through your heart, there's a possibility that the cords can become loose, and you don't have a strong connection to anybody that you would typically have a strong connection with, just because you aren't doing anything energetically to maintain that connection. You're doing a lot of mental and intellectual to maintain the connection, but that really deep heartfelt love isn't there, so it's not feeding the cords the energy that they need. So cord work, the relational cord building is really important for them as well.
And I'm guessing, Jennifer, just to finish for today, that because most of these healings or these suggestions that we have been talking are very subtle yet profound, these are not things that a rigid will probably acknowledge right away, because it's not like they had a headache and then they came out without a headache. This is going to change the way they relate with others, but they might only see that after a certain time.
Yes, because it takes time to work through those defenses and see the possibilities of new ways of looking at things. Because, all of us see the world through our defenses. And and that's part of this whole, this whole series is understanding what our defenses are and learning how to heal and release them so that we have a broader perception of the world rather than, through our own little, personal lens. So when we have this broader perspective, we can see the possibilities that life holds. And, all the wonderful opportunities that life brings us through being open to it and understanding that we can choose what we want by being open to feeling. So that's kind of what this boils down to for the rigid is, learning how to be open, more open-minded and more open-hearted, and it does take time to, work through the barriers, the boundaries, and to, do some really important healing on rebuilding and restructuring the chakra system for them.
So we are coming to the end of the character structure series, and boy, Jennifer, let me tell you, every time that you learn a little bit more of these characters, it gives you a better understanding of someone that is on your table, and it gives you a lot of tools that you can use as a healer to enhance the life of people and your own, because there's no way that you are working on somebody without working on you as well.
Absolutely. And you know, that's one of the things about doing healing work and getting a healing when you give a healing. But it's also really, you know, a lot of us feel like we aren't prepared to be healers until we've done a lot of healing for ourselves. And that is absolutely, you know, a valid point. And one of the, it's actually one of the things that, you know, I'm addressing through the school now, is providing a 6-month class in studying your own character structure and your Enneagram and learning the tools to, you know, help that shadow self, you know, that shadow that resides in our core that, you know, causes us to deny those parts of ourselves that we want to hide, that we feel like aren't worthy of coming into the light. So that's a new thing I've got going on. It was one thing I'm like really excited about, because we've done this character structure series and there's so much more to go into with them, with all the structures. And, you know, who doesn't want to, you know, have a broader outlook on life and feel better about being alive and get out of those, you know, responses that aren't helpful for us. You know, they're fear-based, and we have much more fulfilling lives when we aren't coming from a place of fear.
And that is so true. Well, thank you again, Jennifer, for being here with us. And I'm going to invite everybody to go to your website, www.school-of-esoteric-healing.com, for all the information on upcoming workshops and series and all that is going on with the School of Esoteric Healing. Classes are held online as well as in person. So reach out to Jennifer Booth. You can private message her on Facebook, or you can send her an email to info@schoolofesotherichealing.com with the dashes between the words. And I want to thank you again for being here. Have a wonderful week, Jennifer.
Thank you. You too, Claudia. And to everyone out there, thank you for listening to these classes. I've enjoyed being with you so much, and I hope to be with you again.
You will. Okay, so have a good day, and bye.
Thanks, you too. Bye-bye.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.